That. And to be very honest with you, that theme song was so appropriate for tonight. It's just unbelievable. It's almost like I did it on purpose. And I didn't. But I did, I guess, in a way, because there's no such thing as coincidences, are there? So good evening, good afternoon, and good morning, depending upon your time zone, and welcome. Welcome, everybody, to Nightlight Matrix. Welcome, light workers, light body energies, seekers of the light, watchers, wardens, indigos, soothsayers, mystics, questers, and querents, journeymen and journeyers, seekers, star children, and philosophers, and all those who are seeking reason and magic in these times of awakening, evolution, and, of course, transformation. I'm your host, Barb DeLong, and along with Jeannie and Mark Snyder tonight, we invite you to come in out of the mainstream and gather around this nightlight in the darkness and confusion of the times. The show represents a sort of pit stop on your cosmic journey, so sit back, share your light with other light-minded people, gather for a time and be sheltered from the storms and evolution and change. This is my own very small oasis in the turmoil that we call creation. Share with us your lights. We'll share ours with you, and with any luck, we can generate enough light to not only light our ways, but to provide light enough for others who are seeking as well. These journeys that we're on began a very long time ago and will continue long after this lifetime has faded into memory. So gathering together as we do each week generates energy that can and is drawn on by countless others. Coming together and blending our lights creates energy that serves not only ourselves, but humanity as well. If you'd like to learn more about me, I invite you to visit my website. That would be barbaradelong.com. Ton of information there, as well as links to my store and my blogs and all of the other stuff that I'm involved in, including the other shows that I do. And this month especially, I'm overloaded with them, which is a very exciting thing. On Tuesdays and Thursdays from 2 to 4, I co-host with Bear and whoever happens to be the guest on Almost Heaven. It's Lizzie Starr's show. She's out gallivanting, and I'm sitting in for her just for the month. Of course, I expect that she will return the favor so I can gallivant at some point in time, which should be a very big surprise for a lot of you that join me on Nightlight on Friday. On Fridays, every Friday from 4 to 6, Jeannie and I do Nightlight, and that's a great spiritual show where you can call in and get readings. This show is special. This show is a special show that I have started to do on Wednesday nights when I can find spectacular guests to come in. It's in many ways a memorial and honor to my husband who passed away in October, Patrick Cook, so that's why it's called Nightlight Matrix. He had the philosophy that we should put as much information out there as we could to the general public when it had value and when it was something that was important that it be shared, and that's what this show has become. On Wednesday nights, if I can find a host, a guest that has information that I feel, and I have to admit, I guess I am pretty picky as far as that goes, but I'm trying to put information out there so that all of you that are going through this evolutionary process along with me have even more valid information to reach for, to incorporate into your own philosophies and to give a greater richness to your lives. So we've so far done had a number of amazing guests on. I will continue to search for people that have information that has great validity to me, and of course I'm the one that chooses it, so I am very biased for the most part. But that's what being the host of the show lets me do. So it's a really cool thing. Power here. Anyhow, the show tonight is very special to me. Of late, I have been going through, of course, like all of us, even more of an awakening process. And because of that, my philosophies are getting more finely honed. My belief system, of course, changes with every new awakening. There's something else I can add to it, and it expands and it becomes richer and richer for me. Spiritual evolution, awakening is something I think that is an ongoing process for the entire lifetime. And that's how we do gather information. We learn and we grow and we expand. Tonight, my guest is an amazingly lovely man, and I've had the honor to be on his show. That's Ohio Exopolitics. It's on not only Blog Talk, but it's on Revolution Radio, which is something I am still trying to get into and understand. But it's a lovely radio station, and he was somebody that Patrick knew. He is involved in the paranormal, and I got to know him through Patrick for the last couple of years. He is, among other things, an amazingly talented, gifted musician. He plays the guitar, and it's beautiful, beautiful music. If you ever tune into Ohio Exopolitics, all of the music you hear there is his, and it is amazingly beautiful. I've tried to talk him out of some of his music, and at some point in time, I think I'm going to grab some of it, and you'll hear it here on Nightlight. Mark has also, he is probably one of the best-read people that I've met in a very long time. He was one of those that took pity on me when Whispers of Spiritual Wisdom was published and had me on his show and was kind enough to actually read the book. And I found that his insight into the spiritual was above and beyond UFO stuff. He studies the Bible. He studies in all sorts of different areas. And tonight we're going to be talking about, I think, one of his favorite topics, which is Billy Meier. And I have to admit that prior to being, you know, to knowing him, I recognized the name, but I wasn't really... I wasn't very familiar with his material. Since Mark was going to come on, I have spent quite a while educating myself, and I have to tell you, I'm embarrassed to think that I have not been into this material before, because it is such an amazing body of work. But let me bring Mark on so that, you know, he can sort of share with me. Hi, Mark, are you there?
Hello, Barbara. Thank you for that wonderful introduction. And you have a very interesting show and a very interesting style. And I think tonight is going to be a very interesting conversation. So it's great to be here.
Oh, you better believe it. I have crammed for this one. Thanks to you, I have, and you know, I have to, and one of the great things about the spiritual field is there is always something new to learn, and there is always something new to grow into. And sometimes it has value, and sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it has relevance to where you are, and sometimes it doesn't. I found that the more and more I got into the Billy Meier material, the more and more I realized that it so mirrored my philosophy that it was amazing.
Wow.
And I had done some reading previously, and I think what happened, Billy Meier was a native of Switzerland, and so his native language was German. And though he does speak some English, and I think very well, he prefers to speak and write in German. And I read some of his material that I think had not been interpreted appropriately.
Uh-huh.
Because what I read... had anger in it, and after listening to almost 12 hours of his material and listening to him speak, there isn't an angry bone in this man's body. He is a kind, gentle man who is absolutely sincere about what he's saying, and the philosophy that he is putting out there, the teachings that he is trying to share, come only from love. So I am pretty sure I read something that had not been appropriately interpreted and printed and put out there.
Well, you know, Barbara, it's interesting there. I think there are 4,000 pages of contact notes that have been translated into English, and I don't know if you've gotten out to the Future of Mankind site yet, but it's a website put up by a man named James Moore, a fellow from England, who has just basically created a wiki for all the contact notes. And he's divided them basically into three categories. First of all, Billy's early contacts with the player, a man named Sfoth, his contacts from about 16 years old to about 28 years old with a woman named Asket, who is from a parallel universe, and we'll talk about that more. And then finally, his later contacts, which started about 1975, were the meat of his contacts with Semyase and Ptah and Quetzal. And I'll tell the listeners more about this and who all these people are. But I think I'll just start out and kind of ramble for a while, and you can just stop me whenever you like, because I kind of get into a flow with this kind of stuff, and it just kind of speaks for itself almost. Billy, one of the contacts I like to go back to occurred in 1945. Billy was 8 years old, and he got a telepathic message to go out into the forest in Switzerland. And he did. He walked out into the forest there near his home and just sat in the forest and waited. And before long, a silvery pear-shaped craft came out of the sky, and it sat down in a clearing there. And out of this craft, an elderly Pleiaren man named Sfoth came out, walked over to Billy, took him by the hand, led him into the ship, and started telling Billy about what his life would be like. And he told Billy that he was on Earth here for a very important mission, and that he would be giving the Earth a very important teaching. It's called the teaching of the spirit. But he told Billy it wouldn't be easy, that people would try to kill him, that his wife would leave him and call him a fraud, and he would have a great deal of adversity. And then Sfoth started to tell him about his previous life and who he had been before. And that was basically Billy's first meeting, or one of his first meetings with Sfoth. Now, who is Sfoth? And I'll get into more about Billy's past lives and what his purpose here are. Sfoth was, he's since died, was an elderly Pleiaren man. Most people know these extraterrestrials as Pleiadian. Well, their home is a star system about 80 light years beyond our Pleiades. And to make things even stranger and harder to understand, they tell us they're in a different space-time configuration than we are. And maybe if we have time, we can talk more about that later. So Billy's contacts with Sfoth continued up until he was roughly 11 years old. Then he had a few years where he didn't have any contacts. His contacts picked up at about 16 year old with a woman named Asket. Now, Asket is another human extraterrestrial, and she's from a parallel universe to ours. The Pleiaren tell us that 46 trillion years ago, our universe was created in something analogous to what we call the Big Bang. They call it the Sohar, and it's a bright, intelligent light, and it begins the whole creative process of a universe being created. Well, there was also a sister universe created to ours, a parallel universe, It's called the Tao Universe. And there's a race of human extraterrestrials there. They're called the Timmers. And Asket is a woman, a lady from the Timmers. And she gave Billy some very interesting information that we won't go in too much depth tonight. But one of the most interesting things that she told Billy about was a group of negative extraterrestrials that were on the Earth that were kind of a splinter group of the Pleiaren. And they were called the Giza Intelligences. And according to the Meyer material, the Giza Intelligences had a headquarters deep below the Giza Plateau, where the Great Pyramid is. And after the fall of Atlantis and Lemuria, there was a whole line of leaders that were kind of tyrants over the Earth peoples who were recovering from this great catastrophe during the time of Atlantis and Lemuria. Well, these leaders eventually went underground, physically, literally underground, and influenced the Earth peoples negatively and took away what would have been a much healthier spiritual growth for us. So Asket also told Billy that he would lose his left arm in a bus accident in India, and that there was really nothing that he could do about it. And all of this came true. So Billy had contacts with Asket until he was about 27 years old or so. And then eventually went back to Switzerland. He met his wife while he was on his travels, Calliope, and came back to Switzerland, and they started their family. And Billy had no contacts for 11 years. Well, in about 1975, he had his first contact with the Pleiaren woman named Semyasi that most people are pretty familiar with. You know, she's this very beautiful woman. She's 300 years old, by the way. And she's what they call halfway to what the Pleiaren call an Ishwish. Now, the Ishwish is what they call a king of wisdom, somebody who has amassed incredible amounts of knowledge and who is approaching what they call the fifth evolutionary stage of humanity. Not only does the Ishwish have incredible amounts of knowledge, but they've nearly mastered what the Pleiaren call the almost limitless powers of the human spirit, meaning that all of us have these latent abilities, the ability to do telepathy, telekinesis, to look into the future, to look into the past, to affect matter with our minds. Semyasi was halfway to an Ishwish. Now, these Ishwishes, or kings of wisdom, or gods, if you will, visited the earth in our ancient past. And I'll get into that a little bit more and explain how that relates to everything we're talking about tonight. But I wanted to go back to Billy's previous lives. According to the Meyer material, and I know this is very controversial, his spirit, the Pleiaren, have a name for. It's one of the most advanced spirits in our universe. They call it by name. They call it Nokodemian. And if you go back into, for example, I think it's contact note 238, it says something to the effect that Nokodemian brought his peoples from the depths of the known universe into the constellation of Lyra 26 million years ago. The Lyrian constellation was the beginning of human life in the Milky Way galaxy, pretty much. The Lyrians were Titans. They were 20 to 30 feet tall. They had blonde hair and blue eyes and pasty white skin. They lived on extremely large planets, and they had incredibly long lifespans of up to 2,000 years. They mastered space flight about 26 million years ago. They could travel through what's called hyperspace and move from star to star with almost no time passing. The Lyrians developed a tremendous empire that spanned many, many, many worlds. And they sometimes colonized other worlds peaceably, and sometimes the Lyrians conquered worlds. It's interesting because the Lyrians, although they were very advanced, some of the Ishwishes did not develop in a balanced manner, let's say that. Some of the Ishwishes were tyrants. And there were civil wars in ancient Lyra. And now let me go back to ancient Earth history. And I'll step back to the Lyrians again, and I tend to... All of this is related in some very...
Yeah, I know. It's really... It's funny because you mentioned the Titans, and one of the beliefs that Patrick held too, and you know, shortly before he died, it was something that we were looking into tremendously, is the fact that it appeared that not only were there giants in the earth, but that our forefathers actually were giants.
Yeah.
Which would make sense when you come into the fact that, you know, the fallen angels, quote unquote, mated with the earth women, and if that was the case, frankly, you know, the earth women had to be big too, because you know, without getting too graphic, it wouldn't work.
The Lyrians, they came here the first time 387,000 years ago, and the people on the earth at that time, according to the Mayan material, roamed the earth somewhat like wild animals. They were very, very primitive. And the Lyrians that came here were kind of renegades, and they were escaping these wars in the constellation of Lyra, and they broke a lot of their own laws when they were here on earth. And they did abuse the native earth humans, who, by the way, had dark skin. They made some of them slaves, and they damaged them genetically, and I think there was all sorts of horrific things that went on. Another group from Lyra came here and saw these crimes being committed. And as a punishment for these Lyrians, and there were 144,000 of them, and I know you know that's an interesting number.
Mm-hmm. It's a biblical.
They took the ships of these Lyrians, and they took their technologies, and they left them stranded here. And according to the Mayan material, my understanding is that over thousands and thousands of years, they lost their great stature, they lost their knowledge, they lost their technology, they lost their spiritual abilities, and they became fairly primitive, pretty much like the native Earth humans. Although, according to the Mayan material, they still had the Lyrian spirit form.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, they became the basis for the white genetic on Earth. Now, the next step that I'd like to make, I think, is to step back 4.5 billion years.
Big step.
That's a big step to when the Earth was being formed. That's when the Earth started to become solid. And the Mayan material talks about life being brought here through asteroids and microorganisms and that sort of thing, and kind of a natural evolution taking place. And they say that about 225 million years ago, the first mammal appeared on the Earth. Our scientists today call it Adelus basialis cromtoni. It looks somewhat like a shrew or a rat. If you come from that point, about 225 million years ago, to about 9, 10, 12 million years from the current time is when we had the first man. According to Meyer material, primates developed first. The apes developed from the primates, and then Earth humanity, the native Earth human, developed from the primates. And I'm just throwing this out. According to Meyer material, this is the kind of natural process that occurs on planets that naturally support life. However, things are much, much more complicated than that on Earth, because according to the Meyer material, the original settlers of Earth were extraterrestrial humans, and they came from five different locations. And what we've had is the rise and fall of civilizations over great spans of time. Humans came here from the Lyra Vega systems, from the Sirius system, from Mars, from another planet that existed in our solar system that I want to talk about in a minute, called Melona, and from the planet Kudra. The Japanese races came from Kudra. The Japanese and Chinese races went to Lyra Vega, and then from Lyra Vega came to the Earth about 26,000 years ago. So Earth history is very convoluted and hard to follow, and I'm going to try to clear all this up tonight. Let me know whenever we need to take a break.
No, I keep going. I got a feeling that you've got enough material here to go four or five different shows. So,
I want to step back in time 75,000 years, because for some strange reason, I seem to be obsessed with antiquity. 75,000 years ago, our solar system looked very different. Looked very different than it does today. Well, I shouldn't say very different, but different. The first planet to orbit the sun was Mercury. The second planet that orbited the sun was the Earth. The third planet that orbited the sun was called Melona. It's also known as Phaeton. Some people call it Malone. It was a dwarf planet just like the Earth. It had oceans, it had forests, it had rivers, lakes, animals. It had a human civilization on it. That was the third planet from the sun. The fourth planet from the sun was Mars. Mars was a water world as well. It had forests, it had trees, it had lakes, it had animals, it had a human civilization. And I don't know if you've ever watched any of the videos of Dr. Tom Van Flandern, but he'd be a very interesting person for people to watch. He was the head of celestial mechanics for the Navy. He was an astronomer. He'll step you through the NASA photographs of the Cydonia region. He'll show you the pyramids in the Cydonia region. He'll show you the glassy tubes, which were probably transportation systems. He'll show you what I think is the most spectacular thing, something called the crown face, which is much more interesting than the face of Cydonia. Dr. Tom Van Flandern died mysteriously of a quick-acting cancer. He was healthy. 2 weeks later, he was dead. But he came forward. He talked about the exploded planet theory. He was the head of celestial mechanics for the Navy's astronomy department, and he talked about all this. He verified much of what I'm saying here about this other planet called Melona, also known as Phaeton. He also verified much I say about Mars. Now, to make things even weirder, much of the things on Mars that were there 20 years ago have been destroyed. That's a whole other story. We'll get into that tonight. That'll just throw more confusion on things. So we had, in our solar system, we had Mercury, we had Earth, we had Melona, we had Mars, then we have Jupiter, then we have Saturn, then we have Uranus. Uranus had another moon. The moon was actually the planet Venus. The planet Venus, or the moon of Uranus, which eventually became the planet Venus, was ripped off Uranus about 10,000 years ago. Maybe we'll talk about that tonight. After that was the planet Neptune, and then Pluto, and then Trans-Pluto, and then Uni. The latter two planets I don't think we've discovered yet. 75,000 years ago, there was a great war on the planet Melona. The people that lived on this world directed seawater into a magma chamber of a gigantic volcano, and they started the process that led to their planet exploding. When Melona exploded, Mars was pelted with asteroids, the fragments of the planet, which eventually destroyed the civilization on Mars and pushed Mars out of its natural orbit. So eventually, the explosion of Melona, those fragments became our asteroid belt. Mars was wiped out in the process of Melona being destroyed, and some of the Martians escaped to the Earth. Some of the people that lived on Melona escaped to the Earth. According to the Meyer material, all of the spirits, the human spirits that lived on Melona and lived on Mars, entered into the reincarnational cycles of Earth. And that's one of, I just want to comment for a minute about that, because we have Lyrians here, 144,000 Lyrian spirits who died and are now a part of Earth's reincarnational cycles. We have people from Mars, people from Melona. I'll bet there is more than one person in your audience that feels a little out of place here on Earth. Well, that could be why.
Well, you know, it's funny, because I've talked for the last 20 years about 144,000 light body energy people that were here on this planet. And one of the ways that I find someone that I feel is that way, one of the things I say to them is, you don't feel at home. You're constantly looking for home. You just feel like you don't belong.
Wow.
And they look at me usually, and their eyes just light up, and it's like, yes.
I think a lot of us intuitively have known for a long time that something is profoundly wrong here. We may not have memories of a better place, but we know there have been better societies. I don't know if better place is the right word, but there's just a lot of things that go on Earth that are just strange and bizarre.
I think better times better describes it than...
Better times, maybe that's a better way to look at it.
Yeah, I think there have been, you know, we're so... we are so basically programmed by the church and the government and everything else that you know, I mean, according to the Bible, you know, 4,000 years ago is when all of this started, and the reality is we know it was much longer than that. So there's a sense here of we want the pieces of the puzzle, and we don't know where they are, and it's very frustrating. And the more awakened people become, the more frustrated they become. And I really believe there is an awakening process going on within humanity. Are they going to come totally awake? I don't think so, not yet. I think it's a process, but I think that we're seeing the beginnings of it. And people are reaching.
I agree. It's interesting that you mentioned pieces of the puzzle, because for me, the Meyer material, at least for me, I don't say it's for everyone, but for me, it's been filled in a whole lot of pieces of the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember when I first started listening, I listened more to Randy Winters than anyone else in the beginning, and he would say things that I would find absolutely fascinating, but at the same time kind of shocking, because it would almost be like getting blasted by a powerful wind or cold water or something, because it was just shocking. That's the only thing I can say. And I would have to, like, literally just kind of stop for a while and then just kind of meditate on what he had said, because I think you first spiritually recognize it as the truth, and then you have to kind of integrate it with everything else that you think is truth and try to find the relationships between everything.
Yeah,
so,
and I agree with you, and I think that we are coming to a point in time where everybody finds what is their comfortable truth, and it's different for everybody. And you know, it's important that we honor everybody's truth, because, of course, that's where they are, and that's their truth, and that's what they're going to live their life according to. And I think the thing that I was so impressed with when I was watching all of the Billy Meyer stuff, he really, first of all, he doesn't want a big thing made of himself. He doesn't want to be worshipped or called a prophet or anything like that. He's been given the privilege of receiving teachings, and he wants to put those teachings out there. And it's not important that people, you know, his mission is to put the teachings out there. And it's not his mission to cram it down people's throats or insist that it's right or wrong. It's just to put it out there. And that is one of the things that I was very impressed with him. It's not my way or the highway. It's here's my truth. Here are the teachings that my spirit follows. Take what works and, you know, go your way with the other stuff. And it was a very humble, peaceful, loving manner in which he presented the stuff. And some of it is hard to swallow, but his manner is such, and I've put a whole bunch of links up in the chat room. And I'm going to try to, I think I'll put them on my Facebook page too, so that people can go there and check out the links to the material, because there's so much of it. It's profound. And the only thing I would warn people, if you buy Billy's books, be prepared for a very hard read, because what they are Xerox copies of translations. And they're a tough read. They definitely are. But the material itself, once you can get into it, it has a resonance to it that for most people there are going to be parts that are just so familiar it's unbelievable, and you're going to sit back and say, of course. And then there are other parts where you're going to, like you, I'm going to have to think about this for a while. I think one of the most profound things that came out of what I was absorbing today was that according to his teachings, from what I understand, that we are all basically responsible for our own process here, and that the aspect of God is basically a label that we felt we had to put on what is actually and literally a level of consciousness and not necessarily a person. So it's not a matter of reaching outside for somebody to intercede. It's a matter of going within and finding the answer within. And that all of the teachings, everything, is based on love and compassion and caring and giving. I mean, there's nothing there that I have found, at least at this point in time, that in any way has a negative or a power struggle feel to it at all.
You know, that would be a great segue. I don't know when you were planning on taking a break, because we can get into that. And I think that'll probably be at least a half an hour discussion right there.
I was not planning on a break, Mark. If you need one, tell me. But I
break would be great if you don't mind, just for like a minute or two. Is that okay with you?
Sure, you go for it, and I'll sit here and talk about what I found, and, you know, let me know when you come back.
Okay, I thought maybe do you play music like I do during the show, or do you not do that?
No, I usually just IBS it until the person comes back. So I'll talk generally.
I'm going to take a short break. I'll be back right away. Sorry about the burp.
Sure.
All right, thank you.
Okay, I'll try not to say anything too controversial here. I think one of the interesting things about Billy Meier that I found, first of all, he's a very simple man. He apparently grew up on a farm, from what I could gather, and that at an early age, after his first contact, he really didn't like school. School didn't resonate to him, and so basically he played hooky most of the time, and it was his very first contact that actually did a lot of the educating of him. And at the age of about 15, he ran away from home, and the fascinating thing is he joined the Foreign Legion. And, you know, he has pictures of himself in uniform, and he became dissatisfied with the Foreign Legion because he didn't like being around people who were being trained to kill. That did not resonate to him. And so he took a very unusual out. He walked out. He literally walked out of the desert. And he then spent time as being sort of an Indiana Jones type person. He was sort of a mercenary, I think. And then, of course, he had his accident. And after his accident, he went back to Switzerland, where he turned himself in because he had apparently been running from the law. He was put in jail for a couple of years. And then when he got out, he started in on this aspect of life. He's a man that is in his travels. He met Gandhi. He met Farouk. He met he actually met Saddam Hussein. He didn't like him, I don't think, and he met a couple of other, you know, world leaders. And
sorry to interrupt you, Barbara. You know, it's so interesting.
What?
There's so much information in this Meier material. I'll study for the rest of my life and never be able to absorb it all. I'm loving what you're saying now, because that's aspects of the case that I haven't got into as much as I probably should. I mean, just his
well,
life.
You know, you're giving wonderful material that, you know, these people aren't familiar with Billy Meier. And I think that it's important for them to understand this man. He looks like Santa Claus.
He does, doesn't he?
And he his the pictures that and your material is fabulous, and I want to get back to it. But the way that I came into this was because he has the most amazing library of early photographs of UFOs that are profound, and they've been tested and they've been taken apart and they've been to experts all over the world, and people absolutely say this has to be, you know, this is for real. This is not fake. It can't possibly be. And for a while he studied at a Buddhist temple with a monk there, and the monk's granddaughter was there, and a number of years later, the granddaughter, who by then had become a representative to the UN, found a book, and in the book was a picture of her with Billy Meier and her grandfather. She wrote him a letter saying, you know, did he remember her? He wrote back, and he said, absolutely. She flew to Switzerland, and they spent days just talking and remembering the UFOs that hung over the temples.
Right.
And so it was just phenomenal, and she had great credibility. And in one of the videos, they had a school teacher and a number of the postmaster and a number of other people from the village that also saw these UFOs. And they're the beam ships, yes, that Meier talks about. And I read also, to be very fair, I read and I watched some of the videos that were declaring him as a hoax. And for the most part, one was his ex-wife, who was very bitter and angry and really turned her children against him. And, of course, she has a reason to try to debunk him, because apparently she was not too happy with him. And one of the videos was put up by one of his sons, who was angry because of whatever, but what I found profoundly interesting is that in spite of the fact that he was trying to debunk his father, he said, you know, I never saw him trying to fake anything or you know, his, in other words, he really, he apparently was angry with his father, but in this video he couldn't really say anything against him, which I found phenomenal. So yeah, I watched both sides. I wanted to see what the side that, you know, really thought he was a hoax was saying, and basically I didn't find anything that you know, I felt had any value. So, you know, I just watched more of the good stuff. But this is a man who has been shot at. His life has been disturbed to the point that he has not got a normal life. And people would drop in on him constantly, and he always opened his door. He always spoke to everyone. He didn't turn anybody away, and of course his home life suffered profoundly. But there are people that have just volunteered their time and their energy because they were drawn to him and they were drawn to his mission to get the teachings out there. But in no way is this a cult, because you don't have a cult leader. And there is no dogma attached to it. It's just information. Take the information and use it as you will. I found that and I can't remember the name of it, but he was given the latitude and longitude to go to Israel, I believe, to dig up
Helmet of Emmanuel.
Yes.
Helmet of Emmanuel. Yes.
Helmet of Emmanuel, and the man that was with him that dug it up. It was written in Aramaic. See, I did my homework, Mark. It was written in Aramaic, and he took it to translate it. And Billy went home, and a number of years, I think, later, he received a third of it that had been translated, and the man said, I have to hide. I have to run. They're after me. And apparently people were after him. They did chase him, and I think he finally went to Iran, where he wrapped a scroll up and he hid it in the wall of the village that he was in, and he and his family were all machine gunned down, and the town was destroyed. So they only have a third of the material that was in the in that document. But Emmanuel is the person that we call Jesus. And that he was the hybrid of one of the extraterrestrials and a human named Mary, and that he did survive the crucifixion. And so, you know, and I didn't really get into the material that was in the document that was only a third translated, but, you know, perhaps you have.
Well, first of all, let me compliment you on your incredible research. Done a tremendous job, and you've learned a tremendous amount. And what was so interesting while I was listening to you is understanding that there are so many perspectives to this information. Listening to you, I got a great perspective that I enjoyed very much, and Michael Horn has a different perspective, and Randy Winters a different perspective. And I like yours because it's so personal and personable, and I think that's a real important part of the story. I have been extremely metaphysical, and I hadn't realized that until I heard you, and I'm so glad that you've gotten into this information, Barbara. I think you've done a real good job studying-wise. You know, you touched on, well, you've kind of led us back there, either consciously or unconsciously, with the Talmud of Emmanuel, but you touched on the teaching of the Spirit, and I thought that would be a good place to maybe start at. According to the Meyer material, Billy's human spirit was brought here, and he's been on a 13,000-year mission. And according to the Meyer material...
Okay, one of the things, you know, I'm not correcting you, Mark, I'm adding to you.
You may be correcting me because I could be wrong about some of this stuff. It doesn't surprise me.
One of the things that I found fascinating was that when he was asked about the spirit And so apparently they according to the Meyer material, that we have a soul and we have a spirit, and our soul is basically what it's located in our solar plexus, which is basically personality and emotional stuff, and our spirit it rests someplace within our brain. The soul, according to what I saw or learned or whatever, is here for this lifetime, but the spirit goes on lifetime after lifetime after lifetime, and it is constantly gathering material with each lifetime that it goes into.
Very true. Very well put. Very well researched. I'm impressed again. Let me start here. The universe that we live in, the material universe that we live in, is the physical manifestation of one spirit. And they refer to this spirit as the creation. It is a universal consciousness. It is neither good nor evil. It exists in each human being as a tiny fragment. The human spirit is a tiny holographic fractal copy of this universal consciousness. The material universe that we live in is the manifestation of the wisdom of this spirit. And our purpose in life is to acquire wisdom, because wisdom is a kind of knowledge that produces energy. And when we produce this energy, we help the whole universe to evolve. The creation, this universal consciousness, creates material universes as a part of its own evolution. So we're kind of boots on the ground, so to speak, for the creation.
Mm-hmm.
When the go ahead.
The creation is, and I think that's what some people will have trouble swallowing, is not, well, biblically speaking, would that equate with El, who is supposed to be the name for God, you know, Jesus' Father God. Wasn't El supposed to be the name of God?
Okay, according to the Meyer material, and I always like to say that.
Mm-hmm.
According to the Meyer material, the creator of the universe is not anthropomorphic.
Right.
It doesn't become angry. It doesn't become jealous. It isn't vengeful.
But is that who or what most people equate to, quote unquote, God?
The Meyer material, specifically, the Pleiaron do not like the word God.
Okay.
Because they tell us our religions have undermined our sense of personal responsibility.
Absolutely.
And they say that we depend on God, quote unquote. We depend on priests. We depend on pastors, when we should be learning a personal sense of responsibility, and that we should take responsibility for everything we think, everything we do, everything we say. Go ahead. Go ahead.
No. That's basically where I have come to, and I think everybody has a right to have a religious belief or foundation or whatever, because, you know, some people need to have that, and I think at many times in our life that we need that foundation in order to grow beyond it, and it takes a great deal of courage to let go of that and embrace the fact that we're responsible.
Yes, it certainly does. The human spirit is what survives after death. When we physically die, our human spirit goes into the energy band around the planet that we die on. The Meyer material calls this the fine matter world. Now, it varies, but we spend somewhere around 120, 250 some years between lifetimes before we're put back into a human body. Now,
okay, wait. I have a question here.
Sure, sure.
As a medium, as a channel, I see another dimension.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and I talk to spirits in that dimension. And you're right with your time frame. I usually say it's 100, 120 years before the soul, the spirit, comes back into this plane.
Mm-hmm.
So are we talking about the same thing? Because it's called, by the spiritualists, it's called Summerland. With many, it's called a lot of, you know, of other different names. Heaven. It is
yeah.
called heaven. But is this what you're talking about? I want people to understand, you know,
sure.
the equation to what they're familiar with, so that
right.
they can relate to the Meyer material, because otherwise we're going to lose people here.
Yeah, I agree with you. That I think it's probably a good analogy. Yeah, my understanding is we're kind of in a sleep state, but by the same token, I think it's kind of a blissful sleep state. So yeah, it could kind of, yeah, similar to what some people would call heaven. The creation, the universal consciousness, places that human spirit back into the body of a child 21 days after the sperm fertilizes the egg. The human spirit comes in. Now, what also comes down is what they call the consciousness block. The consciousness block stops your past life memories. Now, it doesn't always stop them. There are people that do have legitimate past life memories. There are people that have some false past life memories. But at this stage of our evolutionary development, the universal consciousness, the creation, blocks most all of our past life memories to keep us from having that incredible confusion of trying to deal with past life issues. So
yeah,
we're
but
given.
Matt, but Mark, I work with past lives with people, and
mm-hmm.
and there are a number of shows that I do with other mediums where we give past lives because there's direct relevance to this lifetime. I think that you're right. If we had access to 10,000 or 20,000 past lives, yeah, we'd be really screwed up royally. But but I think that there are times when there are relevant past lives that carry wisdom that we can utilize this lifetime, and I do believe they become accessible.
You know, I agree with you. I think we do access wisdom from past lives. Now, my understanding used to be that we accessed it subconsciously, but I think that there's another material, something else going on there, and Michael Horn kind of corrected me a little bit the last time I had him on the show. Some of that comes down from the Akashic Records, and
mm-hmm.
you can also inadvertently pull other people's past life information down from the Akashic Records. But I think our past life experience profoundly impacts us in this current life. And this is just my personal opinion. I have not read this anywhere in the Meyer material. I think it takes 40 or 50 years for you just to kind of get reoriented in a life. And then after 40 or 50 years, you start to kind of have a knowing of who you are, and probably it's part of that past life wisdom coming.
That's interesting that you say that, because it is, and I don't know whose teaching it's according to, but I think it's Native American, that after 50 years, the women come into a period that is called the crone period. And that's a period of time where no longer are they focused upon children and family and home, but that is when their spiritual journey truly begins. Now, I think that term crone had to be, you know, excuse me for, you know, being nasty to your sex, but I think a man figured it out, because there's nothing equivalent for men that is as disparaging as calling themselves crones. But I think that after 50 years, I think that all of us come into a period of time where we are not focused so much on survival and reproduction as we are focused on the wonder of the spirit and the element within us and what is drawing us through time.
Very well said. Very well said. We could probably do a whole show on that.
Probably.
It's interesting. I feel like I've awakened more in the past 3 years than I probably have in the past 30 years. And I'm very surprised at where I am, because it's not where I thought I would be.
Welcome to the club.
What's interesting is that kind of since I've stepped outside the box, I think I understand my Bible a whole lot better than I used to. I don't know if we have time to get into all that tonight, but I think when you start to understand reincarnation, when you start to understand the previous civilizations that have been on the earth, then some of those verses in the Bible make a whole lot more sense.
Well, like, yeah.
Like, for example, where did Cain's wife come from? Well, if there was another civilization on the earth that wasn't talked about in the Bible, she could have came from there. That would also explain why Cain built a city. You know, as far as we know, after Cain killed Abel, there were only three people on the earth.
Well, now, didn't they say that, you know, your Bible is much better than mine. I wish Patrick were around because he'd be able to quote his chapter and verse. But I think it did talk about the fact that outside of Eden, there were towns and villages.
I think it's completely unaddressed. I think it's part of the missing information. And it's in chapter 3 and chapter 4 of Genesis. It just talks about Cain taking a wife, and it talks about him going to the land of Nod and building a city.
Yeah, I don't think that they built another woman for him out of spare material or anything like that.
No.
I think that Adam and Eve were a creation of a consciousness, and they were put down in on the earth plane in the garden. But I think that there were already residents here on the earth plane.
Yeah. There's been. Well, I kind of alluded to that earlier. There have been civilizations on the earth for quite some time. We could probably, at some point, it'll probably be good to go back to Atlantis and Lemuria. I just wanted to briefly mention that the Meyer material says that Billy's spirit was brought here. They refer to it as Nokedamian. And they say that that spirit has incarnated on earth as Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, Muhammad, and Galileo. And each time he incarnated as a prophet, he taught the teaching of the spirit. And his spirit has been on a 13,000-year mission. According to the Meyer material, the Pleiadians say that their forefathers, or our forefathers, and we talked about our forefathers, the Lyrians, according to the Meyer material, in the Milky Way galaxy, there are 7.5 million human civilizations at 7 different evolutionary steps. They say that we here on Earth are a stage 2 civilization. They call stage 2 civilization rational. Stage 3 civilizations are intelligent. They say we're not yet an intelligent society. We can think, we have technology, but we haven't graduated yet to stage 3. Stage 4 societies are societies that do master spaceflight. They can travel from star to star using hyperspace. Stage 5 societies are societies where some people reach the level of the Ishwish we talked about earlier, that master the almost limitless powers of the human spirit. They can do telepathy, telekinesis. They can look into the future, look into the past, affect matter with their minds. Stage six societies. These are all human. In stage six, we become half physical and half spiritual. And in stage seven, we go back to the creation, back to the source. Now, the Pleiaren are a stage five civilization. They're only 3,500 years ahead of us in technology, but they say something like 35 million years ahead of us spiritually. They tell us we are an insane society rushing headlong to our own destruction, and that only a mass change of consciousness can keep us from repeating the cycle of destruction that occurred on Earth again and again and again. And that's why way back in the beginning of the show, I talked about the planet Melona and the fact that we had two other worlds with civilizations that have been destroyed. So the Meyer material is a message about love. It certainly is. In fact, they say that wisdom and love go together, and that the creation and its laws are wisdom and love. And that if you look at the earth, if you look at the bushes and the trees and everything that crawls and flies on the earth, and even the waters, all of these life forms have a spirit form. And they're all on a journey through time that involves many, many different lifetimes. And the Meyer material says that even the simpler life forms are connected together through psychic vibrations. And that's why when you go into a forested area or you're nearby the woods, you can hear the birds singing and talking to each other. You can hear the crickets chirping back and forth and the peepers and the frogs. The problem with the earth human is that we've lost our connection to the creation. Whenever we see a beautiful flower or an animal or another human being, we should relate that back to the infinite beauty of creation. Experience tells us that the creation is infinite beauty. It's beauty beyond beauty. The problem is we here on Earth are using what they call material intellectual thinking. Material intellectual thinking is based on egoism. It's based on pride. It falls prey to the lowest level of human sentiments. What they're trying to do with the teaching of the spirit is to reintroduce our respect and love for the creation.
I would go along with you on that. I think that one of the largest problems that we've got today is the element of ego and power and reaching for power and wanting supremacy. And don't get me wrong, my difficulty is that most of us have only this small frame of reference for this lifetime to draw upon, and it's very hard to if I say I think we should, like when Jesus left the planet, his disciples got together, they pooled their money and they took care of one another, and somebody said, well, that's socialism, and I think that throwing labels on things restricts their power, their energy, their ability to help other people, and I have great problems with labels these days. It's you're putting things in cubby holes, you're restricting their potential. And I think sometimes the ego, that part of you that anchors you to this reality and prevents you from having an ascendant consciousness is something that all of us are working very hard on getting under control. I'm not saying we shouldn't have egos. You know, trust me, psychics have the biggest egos around. But from time to time when we're working with people, we can put our ego aside and blend with another's energy. And I think that's something that all of us need to learn how to do, not necessarily to read, well, yes, actually to read other people, not for show and not as a parlor game, but to blend with another's energy, to be trustful enough to let down your barriers and say, okay, here's who I am, who are you? Mm-hmm. And not put a label on what you're doing, as much as, you know, just blending and trusting another human being. And come on, you don't do it full time because, you know, that could mean problems for you. But to be able to put your ego aside at certain points in time, and it's something that as I channel, when I work, when I'm doing readings, when I'm doing spirit circles and stuff like that, my ego, it takes a nap or it goes to lunch, and it's not there. And I'm in those other people's energies, and I'm drawing wisdom from them that they've carried through time, and I'm saying it out loud so that they can validate it or say, yes, I knew that, and give them confirmation that the wisdom that they think they have, they truly have.
I think you make a good point about labels. Unfortunately, I think that's one of the things our society does is, if you listen to mainstream media, it turns into a bunch of labels and even name calling. You know, it's just really, it's very confrontational. And I don't think any spiritual growth I guess you can have some spiritual growth from confrontation, but I don't think that's always the best way to go. And,
I don't think it's not to
beat the mire material, you know, not to pound anyone with the mire material. I'm not in the business of convincing anyone about the legitimacy of the mire material. I'm very thankful to be able to talk about it. You know what I mean? I'm not trying to convince anyone.
I don't think that you are a cultist. I think that you found material that is profoundly wonderful, and I think the important thing with any kind of material, any teachings that we come across that you have a resonance for, it's important not only to read it, to absorb it, but then to incorporate it into your own philosophy and then walk that philosophy. And it isn't so much the understanding and the knowing as it is the wisdom of the living that says, I'm living this teaching.
You know what I think I'll do, if it's okay with you, is I want to step back a little bit. I'd like to, if it's okay with you, I mean, you're the host. We can go any direction you want because I can talk about the spiritual teachings all evening if you'd like. But I was thinking about going back to Atlantis and Lemuria. Is that all right with you?
Oh, yes, let's go.
Okay, let's take it.
You know I have a different opinion as to Atlantis.
Oh, I
so.
Forgot. I'm sorry.
But let's go.
We'll
throw it out and we'll let people giggle over it. Go ahead.
Yeah, they can giggle over it if they like. For some reason, this really resonates with me. There was a man named Atlant, who was in this fifth evolutionary stage of development I've talked about. He was an Ishwish. He was a man of obvious Lyran descent. He had pasty white skin, blue eyes, broad shoulders. And he came from Beta Centauri. Now, the closest star system to the Earth is a trinary system. It's Alpha, Beta, and Proxima Centauri. And Dimitar Saslov, who is the head of the Kepler mission, announced about a year ago that they have discovered an Earth-like planet near the star of Beta Centauri, just to let you know. Atlant came, according to Myers material, from Beta Centauri. Now, to make this even more confusing, they say in a different space-time configuration.
Okay.
He came here with his wife, Karayshide, who was also an Ishwish. And they brought thousands of people with them. And they settled on an island continent near our equator that had a very warm climate, good for living, roughly between today. I'm sure the continents looked a little different back then, but today would be near our equator between South America and Africa. And it wasn't long before the Atlanteans built a beautiful skyline on this island continent. Now, another man came here, Muras, and he founded the city of Lemuria that existed, according to Meyer material, where the Gobi Desert is now. At that time, I don't think it was a desert. He also built two underground cities there, Agartha Alpha and Agartha Beta, that were connected by this incredible tunnel system. And Atlantis and Lemuria lived in peace for thousands of years. Now, as I said earlier, not all the Ishwishes developed ethically. And there was another Ishwish that came to Earth. His name was Eris the Barbarian. And he brought with him 200 leaders and subleaders. One of those leaders and subleaders was a man, a scientist, named Semyasa. Now, at this time, according to Meyer material, the native earth peoples still roamed the earth somewhat like wild animals in packs. But they were human enough. Some of the females were quite beautiful. And Semyasa mated with an earth woman. Now, this was against the rules of the Atlanteans. It was against the rules of Eris. The offspring of Semyasa and this Eva, this earth woman, was a very attractive male they called Adam, who was quite tall, by the way. Eventually, over the course of some time, Adam also mated with an Eva. And according to the Meyer material, this became the basis for the modern Earth human. Now, when Eris heard about this, he was enraged. And he killed some of his leaders and subleaders. And others of them he banished. To make a long story short, eventually, because of the activities of Eris and his men, and this is a long story and I'm really cutting it short, they got this great war between Atlantis and Lemuria to get started. The Atlanteans struck first, and they pretty much melted the city of Lemuria to the ground. Some of the Lemurians escaped, and they escaped to our asteroid belt. Remember, the asteroid belt, according to Meyer material, is the fragments of this planet Melona. Yes. They attached a drive system to one of these fragments and guided that fragment like a great weapon, like a great asteroid, back to the Earth. And they aimed it at Atlantis. Well, as it entered our atmosphere, it made this horrific sound. It's just a bone-chilling sound. It exploded about 100 miles up in our atmosphere like a great shotgun blast and rained down on the Earth. Well, there were two major pieces of this asteroid that were still intact, and they splashed into the Atlantic Ocean like two great fists and slammed into the floor of the Atlantic, and supposedly those two great craters are still there to this day. Well, this started a horrific tsunami on the Earth, which pretty much wiped out almost everything. Atlantis sunk underneath the waves. There were a series of both underwater volcanoes and above ground volcanoes that took place, and smoke filled the entire atmosphere of Earth. And eventually there were earthquakes, and eventually a pole shift. Now, after this great catastrophe, there was very, very little human life left. There were very little animal and plant life left. It took thousands and thousands and thousands of years for the Earth to recover from this great catastrophe. More people finally came here after many thousands of years from Beta Centauri. One of these people was Eris the 11th. He was a descendant of Eris the Barbarian. Now, the people who were left on Earth were just primitive. They were climbing out of the rubble of Atlantis and Lemuria. They didn't know who they were. They didn't know where they came from. They didn't know their own history. They had hardly any technology. So Eris the 11th and his people set themselves up as the dictators and the rulers of the native Earth people, who were just getting their bearing again and recovering from this great catastrophe after thousands of years. Eris had a son named Jehovan. After 200 or 300 years, he took over his father's rule. He literally killed his father. Jehovan allowed himself to be called the creator of the universe by the native Earth humans. After 200 or 300 more years, Jehovan had a son he called Jehave. Jehave was just as bloodthirsty as his father, killed his father, also allowed himself to be called the ruler or the creator of the universe. And he was at that time pretty much the dictator of the Earth. There was a man named Hen who usurped the power of Jehave. And for a while, he was the dictator of the Earth for hundreds of years. He took, according to Meyer material, the title Jehovah. And he allowed himself to be called the creator of the universe. Well, Jehovah lost power to a man named Comegal the first, and then another man took over named Comegal the second. Well, the time that I just described was literally thousands of years of these rulers that existed both in a public way on the earth as well as in a not so public way. According to the Meyer material, at some point this group went underground far beneath the Giza Plateau. They were called the Giza Intelligences, and they negatively influenced the Earth human telepathically. This is where we got our concept of the creator of the universe being angry, being jealous, being vengeful. This is where we got our idea of God. Go ahead.
This is the Old Testament.
This is the Old Testament, exactly. This
okay.
is where we got our idea of the creator of the universe requiring animal sacrifice and human sacrifice. This is where we got our idea of the creator of the universe commanding one army to go wipe out another army. This is where we got our idea of the creator of the universe telling one group of soldiers to go kill the women and the children out of another tribe and steal their virgins. Anyway, this is why the Meyer material is in many ways so negative against the Earth religions, because they say we've made our concept of the creator of the universe as anthropomorphic.
Uh-huh.
And having all these, and I know what I'm saying is incredibly heretical. And literally, to the point of being blasphemous.
Well, I think that some people probably will be. Well, no, the chat room's gotten even more full, so don't worry about it. But I think that here is, you know, and it's one of the only places that I truly have a different opinion, and I think what we have to, you know, really underline and underline and underline is that these are theories. These are, you know, we will be able to prove it when we croak. And, you know, we get to the other side and we find out who's at the reception desk, I guess. But I have, you know, for the most part, you know, the Meyer material, I have no problem with. I do, however, have a different idea as to Atlantis. And I really am going to take this opportunity to put it out there because it's something that's, I don't want to say it's channeled because I don't want people to get the misconception. I when I say I channel, I bring things through from my higher consciousness. There's not somebody standing there whispering in my ear. So through a process of whatever, my consciousness has decided to open another door for me. And this is the information that I found inside that doorway inside myself. And, you know, you guys can take it for whatever it's worth. But right now it really resonates to me. I got the opinion, the philosophy, it came to me, I guess is the only way to put it, that the ships that we see out there that are, you know, in the night sky and stuff like that are basically like, if for want of a better word, dinghies. And for those of you who don't know boating, whatever, you know, you have a dinghy to get to the big ship, to get to the big boat. You have a dinghy that, you know, you cruise around and you do little, it's like a jetney. It's like something that you do chores in. And actually there is, and I'm going to call it a mothership only because I don't have a better word for it. But the actual ships that these extraterrestrials came from were huge. And they didn't hide out anywhere. They were just beyond our perception. And these smaller ships came and they did the watching of the planet and stuff like that. Well, at one point in time, thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago, that ship had difficulties. And it was not an interstellar ship. It was an interdimensional ship. It shifted between dimensions. It didn't take off on long journeys to go, you know, 700 Earth whatevers. It was an interdimensional shift, and the shift took place almost immediately. But in that shift, something happened, and this is going to really sound. It had in essence a flat tire, and it came to rest upon the Earth plane, and it came to rest. In the middle of the water, and it sat there for a great length of time, and when people discovered it was an island, and they interacted with the people because the people who were in the ship came out. They lived on the surface of the ship, and as they were looking for whatever they needed in order to fix it, in order to shift back to their dimension, and it took them probably thousands of years in order to find what they needed in order to make the repair that they needed to. In that time frame, they interacted with those of us who were on the planet. They were obviously evolved. They were obviously beyond us. They were obviously, they had talents and gifts that were beyond our understanding. They could do teleportation. They could do all sorts of unbelievable things with their minds, and did so. And at some point in time, they sent out emissaries all over the planet, not only to interact with those of us here and gather information because they had nothing better to do with their time, and to sort of make contact and see if they could you know, help in subtle ways the populace to develop and evolve. At some point in time, they got what they needed, and as the as was their want, they repaired their ship and they shifted back to their home dimension, wherever that was, leaving these emissaries here on this planet. And they were stranded. They were left behind. And because they had no way of connecting to the ship, because they had no way of getting home, they did the best they could, and they merged with whatever population they were with at that particular point in time. They used their talents and their gifts to help that society evolve, ergo pyramids on Giza, ergo the South American pyramids, and many of the other megalithic structures that are on the earth plane. They helped the cultures they were in until they died, and when they died, they took with them their talents, their skills, their wisdom, their understanding. But prior to that, they shared the astrology. They shared what they could with the populace that was here for whatever, you know, they shared what we would be able to absorb and utilize. And that's why and that was what Atlantis was, and it came down through the thousands of years. It became a fable. It became a story. That's my concept of what Atlantis is for now.
I like your concept. It's
okay.
Really kind of interesting. It sounds a little bit like I have a guest. His name is Henry Kroll. He's interested in a lot of things. He's written like 7 books, and he talks about some of the ancient writings of India, and they talk about flying cities being on the earth during that time.
Well, look at the Gita. They talk about it. They talk about, you know, flying cities, flying thrones, flying. I mean, it's we have always described in all of our histories only, you know, utilizing whatever vocabulary we had in order to explain things that we didn't understand. Look at if you go back into the Bible, when their word for sky was heaven. So most places in the Bible where you see heaven, they really were just talking about the sky.
Right. That's a good point.
So, especially with the Vedas and everything, they talk about flying cities and flying carpets and flying cities, and why not? Why not an island? You
it's
know,
interesting. I think our history is so much more interesting than what our history books tell us about.
Oh, yeah.
There is just so much interesting stuff there. Barbara, can you hold the fort for like 30 seconds while I take another very, very short break? I'll be right back, I promise.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, I'll be right back.
Okay. I really do believe that most of us are coming to a point in time where we are letting go of some of the restrictions that we have and opening ourselves up to and theories. Theories are facts that haven't been proven. And some theories float and some theories don't. But I think that we should all be open to the possibility that what we have read in history books and what we have been told are just foundations that we're supposed to work from. They aren't totally carved in stone, except of course if you're in ancient Egypt or down in South America at those sites. But we have to be flexible. We have to be more open. And again, I'm not trying to cram anything down anybody's throat. I'm just putting out another possibility. And I think that we need to be open to all sorts of different variations on a theme, so to speak. The history of any particular culture is written by those that have conquered it, and the loser's story is lost totally. So that for a lot of the Bible stuff, you know, we have to rely upon Josephus, who was paid by the Romans, and so. You know, you don't know what some of the other explanations as to our evolution, explanations as to how we became who and where we are. And it just, to me, is a fascinating possibility that there's so much more out there, and I truly do believe that we are the children of the stars, and pick whichever stars you want, because certainly Orion's Belt and the Pleiades have been areas that we have as a culture oriented structures towards, and I think that it's pretty interesting that the Giza Plateau and a lot of the structures down in South America are aimed at the Pleiades and are aimed at Orion, and I think that it's not a coincidence. There is a purpose to this. And because we have a limited, it isn't that our minds are limited, it's the available material that is limited. And I think most of us today have very, very open minds, and we're open to taking material in, and we're open to sort of chew on it and see what fits, what tastes good, and then whatever doesn't taste good, we spit out and we move on. But I think our spirits are certainly reaching for a greater understanding of our purpose in life and what life is. It is, in my opinion, at this point in time, and I have to say at this point in time because constantly we're growing, our purpose is to evolve, and our purpose is to grow, and our purpose is to understand the true meaning of love and unconditional love. And it is also important for us to accept the fact that we are a part of a singular family. Humanity is at this point in time a family upon this planet. And it's up to all of us to work together to do our best for the planet. A wonderful video everybody should look at some point in time is one called Home. And the link for it is on my website on the video page. And it's an amazing video that shows you the planet and how we haven't totally ruined it, how there's still absolutely room for us to be able to pull things back from the edge of chaos. And it doesn't have anything to do with governments, and it doesn't have anything to do with religions. It has to do with us as individuals, and it has to do with our obligation to embrace one another and help take care of, you can look at the Earth as in some ways as a spaceship, and we're hurtling through space on this ship called Earth, and it's our obligation. What?
Sorry to interrupt you, Barbara. I was just wanting to let you know I was back, and also that I was real impressed with how much you've learned about the Meyer material in a very, very short time. I was very, very impressed. You know,
well,
and you're taking a very personal point of view with the Meyer material, which I thought was so interesting. It was just very, very edifying. It just gave me a whole different perspective on it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I really did. I thought it was very well said and very well put together.
Well, I do try. Well, I think that those of us who do radio shows have an obligation. And it isn't so much that we should pick and choose, although I do. It's. I think we're here to put information out there. And what I love about Blog Talk Radio especially is that everything is archived, that people can go into the archive and re-listen to the information. And I think that we're supposed to be doing that. I think we're supposed to be sharing philosophies and theories. And you do better than I do. You have people that you have on your show, and you're very gracious, and you give them their time and their space, and they're able to put their information out there. And I don't always agree with them, but I think you're very good at doing what you do. And I wish you did more with the Meyer material. I think my only criticism is that it is so vast that it's a lot for somebody who has never heard any of it to swallow. And so I think you're so steeped in it. I don't know how long you've been studying it, but it has to be a long time.
I think I've been on the fast track. You know, I know a guy that's been studying it 30 some years, and he's always telling me, I just can't believe how much you've learned. I don't know. Maybe partially I'm remembering. It's hard to say. One thing I thought I would throw out to you, you might find this interesting. One thing about the teaching of the spirit that they talk about is that we should, as earth humans, learn to control our thoughts, because they tell us that the creation, the universal consciousness, is a neutral positive entity, and they tell us that we should learn in our thinking to be neutral positive. And what that means is, of course, we shouldn't have negative thoughts, because those lead to psychic illness, you know, anger and bitterness and jealousy and vindictiveness. But they tell us also that we shouldn't have thoughts that are too positive, because they can lead to unrealistic expectations and egotism and things like that. So we should start to learn to analyze our thoughts and to be able to step back and look at our thoughts and to be able to identify those times when we're negative in our thinking or unrealistically positive in our thinking. The Plaron tell us that one of the main reasons they can't have and don't want to have open contact with us is because of our thoughts. And they're very highly telepathic, and they can sense our negative thinking, our fear, our worry, our anxiety, our lust, our greed. And they react to it like a bad smell. And quite literally, they can't be within 297 feet of a normal earth human unless they have their protective equipment. Because our thoughts produce, a negative vibe, for lack of a better term, that causes them to behave irrationally and causes them to feel very uncomfortable and sometimes even literally lose control of their bodies. So they don't want open contact with us at this stage of our evolution, and that's why they brought this proxy here, which is Edward Albert Meyer, who has a very, very ancient spirit, who has a compatible vibration, if you will, with them. Mm-hmm. So I would throw that out as a part of the teaching of the spirit that he talks about a lot and that I think is very important. Now, I don't know if you wanted to try to touch on this tonight or not, but he has some prophetic material, and some of it's gloom and doom, and that may not be your style.
The gloomy doomy stuff has to do with, I think, perception, and again, I think that I don't think it's gloom and doom. I think it's more of a being realistic and saying, okay, if you keep going this way, this is going to happen, and if you change your way, then this can happen. And you're right. I am more of a Pollyanna-ish person. I know, according to the Meyer material, that he says we have about 800 years to go before we actually are able to blend in with the cosmic brotherhood that's out there. Cosmic brotherhood being my word, not his. And I have a
I like that word.
Yeah, that's mine. But anyhow, I think that I am somebody who is really more positively oriented, and gloom and doom, you know, I understand it's there, and I understand he has predicted. And wait, can you explain first the difference between prophecy and prediction?
Yeah, it's a good point you bring up. He says there is a difference between prophecy and prediction, prophecy being something that could occur if we continue on the same path that we're on. A prediction is something that so many things have already happened that there's really no way to avoid the event from occurring. Or another prediction example could be a cosmic event. And one cosmic event that they, I think it's a prediction, is the Apophis meteor, which is supposed to strike the Earth in 2028. And the Russians have already acknowledged this and are starting to try to work with the Chinese on coming up with a way where they can push this asteroid out of the way so it won't hit the Earth. Now, from what I remember in the Meyer material, it's supposed to hit somewhere near the Baltic Sea.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
But see, I think a lot of the gloom and doomy stuff is what might happen. It's not an absolute.
I agree.
And so I think that people have to understand that this is this could happen if things don't change. And so in that way, you know, if you put it in that light, I'm much more comfortable with it. If you tell me that this is carved in stone and there's no way to get away from it, I will argue with you.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, because one of the books that I've been reading, one of the books I think is really interesting is And Still They Fly. It's by Guido Moosberger, and it's hard to pronounce his name, but they had at one time a prophecy about when World War III would occur. And when that was published, the people in the FIGU started this meditation about world peace. And it's caught on with a certain level of popularity. And they say just with the few hundreds, or there's maybe 1,000 people on Earth that are doing this peace meditation, that it's already pushed that out. So this inevitable, seemingly inevitable date of World War III, and supposedly the player and themselves were even amazed by that.
Yeah, I think that you know, the power, the love that is truly here for the planet. And I was talking to them about the video Home. Have you seen it ever?
No.
No. Oh, on my website, on the video page, there's a link to Home, and it is probably one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. And Patrick introduced me to it, and you know, sit and watch it when you have an hour and a half that you can really absorb the beauty of the planet and the majesty and the profound. The profound greatness of the planet that we're living on, and I really do think we're on a ship. I really think that the Earth is a ship, and that we're hurtling through space, and I think we're hurtling towards a greater spiritual understanding and awareness. And in some ways, I think the spiritual awareness of the people on the planet provide the propulsion that will get us to where we need to be.
Well, you know, I've been real encouraged being on Revolution Radio, although the term, the title is a little misleading. There's a lot of people on that station that are very progressive in their thoughts, and I think they have the opportunity to make a difference in
mm-hmm.
a positive way. And I've been real encouraged by that. There's a lot of, like yourself, people that are putting out very positive, enlightening material. And I think, who knows, maybe things are going to be a whole lot better than what we think.
Well, I think that, you know, that there's that aspect that I talk about, and I feel it more and more and more, of late, especially I'm running up against people who have a greater hunger for information, And it's not that they want to, you know, quote me chapter and verse, because that's a big mistake anyhow, but they're open to suggestion, and they're open to understanding, and they're open to thoughts of spiritual awareness as opposed to religious dogma. And you know, I have nothing against churches. I think they have from time to time done a lot for people, but actually I think that they have provided a stepping stone for us, and we really must reach beyond it in order to ascend into a consciousness that allows us to embrace the potential for the human spirit.
I like the way you put that, kind of a stepping stone, to kind of step beyond that. I was thinking about the same thing today, as a matter of fact. It's kind of ironic that you would bring that up. But I think you're right. I think we do need to get past that kind of, I think the real religious dogma can lead to conflict. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it restricts us. It holds us back. It creates a structure that we can't grow beyond.
Mm.
And it limits us greatly. And you know, in the Old Testament, Moses brought down over 600 commandments for us. And then Jesus said, throw them all away and love one another and take care of the sick, visit the poor. And you know, that's basically, that was an amazing stepping stone. But that was 2,000 years ago. Wouldn't you think we've grown beyond even that? And I'm not saying don't love one another and take care of the sick and visit the poor. But I am saying he, as a person, I think he would be horrified that he became a religion, because that was not his intent. He was here to teach peace and love.
You know, it's interesting that you bring that up, and I'm going to throw this out here as food for thought. I know we're getting close here on time. But as I've studied the Meyer material, and as I've started to look at the Bible from a different perspective, there are always been certain verses that have kind of stood out like clues, like beacons. Whoa, there's something about our understanding that isn't complete, that isn't right. I can't remember exactly. I think it's maybe it's John 10:49. I'd have to look it up again. It says, "Is it not written in your law that you are all gods?" And it also says somewhere, I think also in the book of John, maybe a little later, it says, Jesus said, "Greater things will you do than I have done." And I thought of, you know, he walked on water. He raised people from the dead.
Yep.
And as far as we know, no one has done that yet. Now, was he wrong? I think he was talking to the people that were listening to him at the time.
And he was talking to the people on a mountaintop. He wasn't talking to disciples or apostles. He was talking to the normal people. And you know, that's one of the things that you know, I have always, that's been one of my things that I throw back at people when they tell me I'm doing Satan's work. Because you know, this is what Jesus said to do. And, you know, it's not that I feel that I have a religious, I don't have a religious feeling that I am pushed to do this. But since I saw a flying saucer when I was in college, I changed my philosophy. I felt called or invited to expand my consciousness. So did Lynn Katai, and we never got into it, but you're familiar with Phoenix Lights and Lynn Katai?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, I know her, and she and I talked spiritual stuff after I finally said, okay, I read your book, I saw all the buzzwords, come on, what spiritual stuff was going on here? And you know, in some of the pictures, Billy Meyer has those golden globes.
Yes.
She had the golden globes too, and she felt invited and she felt called. And I think there are those of us that feel like there's a calling of some sort. And I always tell people that I have a calling, and it's literally that. You know, I wait till I am asked, and then I spew whatever I've got. But I don't try to push myself because I know that's not right. The time isn't right. The place isn't right. The people aren't right. And sometimes it's very frustrating waiting for a call to come. That's one of the reasons why I have the show, because I get to call people.
Right. Right.
I think that
would be a great show on Revolution Radio, you and Lynn Kitai. Maybe I can set that up for some night. The one thing I wanted to throw out as far as...
She had a near-death experience, too.
I didn't know that.
Uh-huh. Yes, she did.
Wow, that sounds quite interesting. That sounds like a very interesting discussion.
One of her photographs, too, is the only documented picture of folded time.
Folded time, I remember that vaguely.
Yeah.
You'll have to remind me.
Okay.
Yeah,
no, it's cool stuff. Yeah, she's an amazing lady.
But the one thing I, as far as Christ talking about doing greater works than he did, and he walked on water and raised people from the dead, maybe he was referring to future lifetimes.
Could be.
When we were at a higher evolutionary state. And that probably sounds way out there to a lot of people, but...
Well, don't forget, theoretically, the planet has been re-terraformed 3 or 4 times. So you never know.
That's very, very true.
Yeah.
Very, very true. And are you going to end us right at 10 tonight, or are we going to bleed over?
I'm going to end it at 10, and then you hang on, and I'll pull you into the conference room and talk for a couple minutes, if that's okay with you.
Oh, that's yeah, that's fantastic. Just stay on the line then?
Yeah, just stay on the line.
Okay.
But I do want to have you back on. You know, we just scratched the surface here, and I would love to do this again if you're open to it.
Totally open to it, and I got to have you back on Revolution Radio because we kind of got off on a big detour there on last show. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah.
We got off on a 2-hour detour of pet health, and we never got back to your book. I'm very sorry about that.
No, that's okay. I mean, I'm sure it was important for some, and I learned some stuff, and you know, I have done some research, and you know, I think that I think we're slightly panicked that nobody was going to show up, and then everybody showed up.
You know, what's interesting is you never know where a radio show is going to go.
No, you don't.
I have learned that for years. Boy, they just go off in directions you just weren't ready for at all. And that's what happened that night.
Yeah. Well, I do. I want to thank you. And I want to thank everybody in the chat room. And we're going to have Mark back again. And, you know, please remember this is an archive. And if you need any of the links that I put up, I will put them on my Facebook page so that you can grab them from there and educate yourself a little bit, too. I do recommend you don't try a 12-hour stint like I did, but a little at a time is a good way to go as well. So thank you, everyone, and good night.